C-minus 97. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. The presence of their father prevented Clark from pushing Dan for details on what gave him the idea that they were coming back, but he knew only too well who Dan was referring to. As Clark studied Dan's changing expression, which had begun to relax when the intense pain at the back of his neck ceased and was now veering towards something that looked more like excitement than fear, their front door swung open in a rush of motion. Emma Ford, still dressed for work, ran inside and headed straight for Dan. "Have you seen it?" she asked, wasting no time. "Do you think it could be, you know?" Clark forced a cough. "None of us know what you're talking about," he said, repeatedly raising his eyebrows and subtly tilting his head towards Henry in an effort to stop Emma from saying too much. "Is something wrong? We can talk in the kitchen if you want. My dad is trying to watch the game." Emma nodded, then looked back to Dan, belatedly noticing the drying tears under his eyes. She squeezed his hand and silently asked him what was wrong. He responded by briefly touching the back of his neck with his other hand. Emma's free hand then instinctively reached for her own neck, which had a small remnant of a scar in exactly the same place as Dan's, but she shook her head to tell him that she hadn't felt anything. "Hold on a second," Henry's deep voice boomed from his spot beside the couch. "Look!" The standing trio stopped on their way to the relative privacy of the kitchen and glanced at the TV. Below the familiar sideline reporter, a breaking news banner now filled the bottom area of the screen. Breaking. Developing incident at Kerguelen.
Kerguelen? Henry continued, reaching for the remote. "Dan, did you see something about this downstairs? Is this what freaked you out?"
Dan stammered. Yeah, I just saw something on my TV. Yeah, that's how I knew something weird was happening." With Henry busy changing the channel and Clark impatiently staring at the screen to learn the nature of this developing incident, Emma continued trying to read Dan's expression. "You really think it was them?" she mouthed, without making much of a sound. Dan shook his head and replied at a similarly low volume, "Whatever just happened, I know it was them." In an interesting quirk caused by the phenomenal speed of the meteor and the reliable efficiency of satellite communication, footage of the meteor's initial atmospheric entry had been shared around the world before the sonic boom from its explosion reached the ground. The McCarthys caught the looping footage midway through its third airing, after the flash but before the explosion. When the moment came, the TV's soundbar filled the room with a bass-heavy boom that physically startled everyone. Even Emma, who knew it was coming, hadn't been prepared for the level of this sudden burst of sound. She could only imagine what it must have sounded like in person. She turned once more to Dan, keen to see his reaction to the surely unexpected revelation that an exploding meteor had apparently been responsible for the mysterious twinge in his neck that told him something was happening before he saw or heard what it was. He looked remarkably calm, which helped to ease Emma's uncertain mind. Unfortunately, when Sarah Curtis, Dan's least favorite Blitz News anchor, returned to the airwaves beside a half-screen version of the footage after its third full airing, calmness was in short supply. "Already," Curtis began in her best fear-mongering tone, "speculation is rife that the location of this extraordinary incident, which is so obscure and remote that coincidence seems implausible, may indicate that this is some kind of deliberate message from the messengers themselves, and if that is indeed the case, it certainly seems difficult to consider that a destructive fireball from space could possibly be construed as a message of peace." Emma lifted her phone from her pocket and quickly tapped her way through a few menu options. Seconds later, she tilted the screen towards Dan. It displayed data from her social media meta-analysis app, and with a single glance, Dan could see that the incident wasn't going down well. The main mood cloud was filled with two large words, panic and fear. When Emma scrolled down, the positive-negative pie chart was a wash of red, apart from a tiny sliver of green and a slightly larger slice of uncertain blue.
The straightforward trend list, which highlighted words which were being used far more than normal, contained some specific terms which didn't surprise Dan, given the nature of the aggregate reaction tracking data he had just seen. Kerguelen, Bolide, GSC, Messengers, Meteor, Godfrey, Plaque. The final word in this trending list was the one which gave Dan pause. Henry's continued presence made it impossible for Dan to candidly discuss any of this with Emma and Clark, the only others who shared his secret, but in the confusion of the moment, he didn't know what he would have said, even if he had been able to speak openly. Sarah Curtis and her studio guest, a man who had been there to talk about something else and whose identifying caption Dan had missed, wasted no time in ramping up the fear factor even further, with a word that hadn't been spoken much in the last year. Hostility.
"I think this is undoubtedly going to reignite the hostility debate," the unknown studio guest said. "A debate which we have complacently assumed to be settled ever since the third plaque turned up in Salzburg. I also believe that attention will inevitably, and rightly, turn once again to Richard Walker and his indefensible role in keeping the truth from humanity for so long."
Henry McCarthy sighed at this comment and wheeled his way around the couch. To Dan's frustrated bemusement, Henry had often voiced his view that Walker had been unfairly vilified for covering up the truth for so long during his time as head of the now-defunct Inner Space Defense Agency. Henry had no love for Walker following his frequent personal attacks on Dan, but in broader terms, he accepted that the disgraced politician had done what he'd done for unselfish and patriotic reasons. Dan held his tongue for very different reasons whenever the subject came up, but he knew full well that Henry's views on Richard Walker and the IDA would be significantly less dispassionate if he knew the whole truth. The real truth.
"I think I'm actually going to head to the grill," Henry said, making his way towards his bedroom as soon as he announced this new intention. "I haven't seen Bird in a few days, and he'll be watching the game there. Clark, you in?"
"Not tonight," Clark said. As the trio quietly understood, Henry's departure would finally give them a chance to talk openly about the remarkable situation at Kerguelen. Dan pointed towards his basement, telling Emma and Clark that he'd be waiting for them down there. But no sooner than Henry had entered his bedroom to get ready, he came right back out with his wallet and phone in his hand.
"I'll be late," he said on his way to the front door. "Nice seeing you again, Emma. Stop by for dinner sometime." "But next time," Henry trailed off and knocked three times on the open door. "Knock."
"Unless it's an emergency," she replied.
"Maybe if it's a real emergency, but if it's another glorified shooting star..."
He trailed off again, knocking another three times on the open door before going outside and pulling it closed. The second the door was closed, Emma threw her arms around Dan and hugged him tight.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
"I'm fine."
Emma then gently ran her hand across the back of Dan's neck and stepped behind him to take a look.
"Dan, it's bright red."
"I was kind of clawing at it," he said. "Pretty hard. It felt like the scar was going to burst open. I was just sitting at my desk, and suddenly it was like..."
This time it was Dan who trailed off. He then opened his right palm very suddenly, fully extending his fingers.
"You know, like the scar was going to do that? My legs, my arms, everything felt stiff, and I couldn't scream. When I opened my mouth to shout for Clark, it was like my jaw was locked shut. Then it all stopped, just as quickly as it started."
"Did you really not feel anything?"
"Nothing at all," Emma confirmed. "I just saw the news and I ran here to make sure you were seeing it too."
"Listen, Dan," Clark began, his ordinarily gruff voice evidently trying to be softer than normal. "I'm not saying you're crazy, okay? I know we got into some crazy shit last year, but this... feeling it in your neck? This is batshit. Are you sure you didn't have the radio on or something? Are you sure you didn't see or hear a little snippet about a meteor at Kerguelen and it set something off?"
Dan shot a disappointed glance at Clark before turning to Emma. "We should talk about this in the basement," he told her. Only her. "It's more secure than the kitchen." Come on, man, Clark said. Don't be like that. Just try to be rational. Why would you feel something but not Emma? They put the same kind of neural cable thing in her neck, right? So if you think you're going to feel something if they come back, why wouldn't she feel it too? Who did they call to the cornfield? Dan snapped, anger crossing his words for the first time. Who did they call to Lolo? They didn't even let you on the craft. You didn't even see them. So don't talk to me like you know how they operate.
Enough, Emma said quietly but firmly. We're on the same page here, and we're the only three people on this page. We're in this thing together. Why don't we just sit down right here, turn off the TV, and talk through the possibilities?
Dan shook his head. Basement. It's more secure.
Emma shrugged and followed Dan as he stepped towards the closed basement door.
Leave your phone up here, he said.
Why?
Security.
With Dan's expression giving little away, Emma glanced at Clark. He was already in the process of taking his own phone from his pocket and placing it on the arm of the couch. He silently encouraged Emma to do the same, thinking there was little point in getting into any arguments over small things when there was a much bigger thing to worry about. Somewhat reluctantly, Emma switched off her phone and placed it beside Clark's, locking the front door to make sure it would be safe. Having never been inside Dan's ordinarily off-limits basement, Emma was surprised to see a second door made of thick metal after he opened the first. She was even more surprised as she watched Dan unlock this inner door by placing his fingertips on its surface. The metal door then slid sideways into a recess in the wall, and he set off down the stairs. Combined with the phone issue, this was too much for Emma to let slide.
Okay, she said. What exactly do you have down there? Why do you need so much security?
Dan turned around and called up the stairs in reply, answering both of her questions at once.
This is where I keep my research.